the analogy of, or the metaphor, or the type, or whatever words you want to use, of Israel entering the land, and then certain things take place in that land, Paul says, happened to you, happened to them for an example to you. And there's a particular process that takes place that we've began to see as we've become part and parcel of possessing the land. The first thing was the groves process. The next was the high place identity. Now the molten images. And but in Exodus 23, it talks about this process. Starting in verse 20. Behold, I send an angel before thee, in front of you. And in the Hebrew it says, I send the angel to keep thee in the way and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgression, for my name is in him. He will not pardon your transgression. Now that's a pretty striking statement. Just keep that in mind a minute.
Who won't pardon your transgression?
the messenger, the one that's before you. But if thou shalt indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto thine enemies, and an adversary unto thine adversaries. From now on, your life has to change. And it changes not in some outward manifestation. It changes in how you view circumstances. Please do something with her. Every other religion, we talked about this as part of what we talked about last night with the blood and the covenant. Every other religion desires the best, the brightest, the most beautiful, the most worthy. I don't care what it is. I don't care whether it's some form of Buddhism or Shinto or Muslim or Catholicism or the other forms of Protestantism that require you to perform. They require your best. They require the most beautiful about you, the most pleasant, the best there is. And I can't meet their standards. I can't do it. Maybe some of you can. But in the inability to meet those standards, you come to a position where the recognition that he will not pardon you has to be realized. You have walked, since the beginning of the walk of being a believer, with the idea that God was going to pardon you. In some form or another, if you didn't ever say it, you believed it. You hoped it. But when you enter that land, He will never pardon you again. And the reason that you're looking at life differently from now on is that you know that secret that John talked about. He that is born of God doth not sin. He cannot sin, for his seed remaineth in him. He that is not born of God does nothing but sin. You have reached a point, and we have reached a point, where either Christ is your life totally and completely, or you are without hope. You have reached a point where you never again can judge yourself. If Christ isn't resurrected in you, and if God isn't looking only at Jesus Christ through the cross at you, then you are without hope. You're not pardonable. Now, the only way that you will continue on in this battle is to come to that recognition. That's what the hot seats are all about. All kinds of worship has been permitted up to this point. You've given all kinds of offerings to many, many gods. You've responded just like the way of the Gentile. You've adopted the gods of the people around you. You're adopting the value systems of the people around you, but now, no more. For He will not pardon your iniquity. If you indeed obey His voice and do all that I speak, then will I be an enemy unto thine enemies and an adversary unto thine adversaries. Now, how in the hell are you going to do all that He speaks? How are you going to know what He speaks? Well, now it's time for the tire to meet the road with regard to what obedience is. I've taught you for 10 years what obedience was. Some of you, once in a while, once in a blue moon, have gotten a glimpse of an understanding of what it was. But you've never lived in that light of what obedience is. Obedience, in both the Hebrew and the Greek, the word means that no matter what state, no matter what condition, no matter what stimulus you find yourself in, you hear Him. There is no state or condition that you can be in from this moment forward that is not of Him, and that you do not have the right to second guess yourself in it ever again. Am I communicating?
Yes.
If I ever hear another one of you say, "If only," if I ever hear another one of you say, "Oh, I wish I were different," you'll know the fear of God. You obey His voice by hearing. Hearing meaning knowing only one cause, no second causes. There's only God, no matter what condition that you're in, knowing that He engineered the circumstances to get you to that point, and knowing that you cannot lean on your own arm of understanding to get yourself out of that point. That's obedience. I don't care how I'm talking especially to those of you who have seen the vanity of your idolatry in the hot seats. Some of you, you have an instant emotional response. If a certain stimulus comes at you, you freeze. You go into, you know. So you have an excuse for a minute longer. But for Harry, for Barbara, for Rick, for Tyra, for Gary, for Judy, for Pete, for Pam, for Larry, you are without excuse.
Doug.
Oh, yeah. And Ed.
Especially Ed.
You are without excuse. There is a stone of witness against you. If you desire to be, if you don't believe and know that every circumstance you're in is by the hand of God, and if you don't know that by His hand you'll be delivered from it, and by the zeal of the Lord's house will perform it. You understand?
Yeah.
We are no longer in kindergarten with regard to your lives. You are without excuse. Last night, Tyra was on. We've had a hot bed. Now we had a hot table. My situation became unbearable last night. It happened for the second time. It happened, and Tyra was in a position where she was helpless and worshiping another god, worshiping an emotional idol. At that point, she killed me, she killed you, she killed her sons, her daughter, she killed everybody in order for her to meet the needs and the offering of that one idol. We had a 2-hour battle in there. And now he's gone. Now the frightening part about it is that when that idol got taken out, there's a whole new dimension to Tyra's personality that scares the shit out of me.
It's a good fear. It's a good fear.
She's become a tyrant.
Tyrant.
But anyway, so now she's without excuse.
That's why we have Tyrant.
Go Tyrant.
We're in down for us, Tyrant.
So to speak.
But can you see that you are all moving to a point where there is no thing, neither height nor depth nor principality nor power nor mind nor emotion nor hunger, nor famine, nor height, nor depth, nor death, nothing can separate you from the instantaneous, continuous certainty of who you are. No past histories, and the reason for it is something called a covenant. And He's done all the work. Now listen. You remember I've talked to you about... Well, anyway, I'll just read it. For mine angel shall go before thee. He's going before you. And bring thee into, or unto, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. Now, all of those are the phenomena that are going on in here, which we will identify with specificity. Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after any of their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them and quite break down all of their images. And you shall serve only the Lord your God, and He shall bless thy bread and thy water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of thee. Now, the word sickness here doesn't just mean, oh, I've got a sore throat. The word sickness here means anything that's a spot or a wrinkle, on your peace. Anything that can possibly take you away from the joy and the peace of any moment is, by God's definition, sickness. He will take sickness away from the midst of you. Now, either this is true or we're wasting our time. Now watch. There shall nothing cast their young, nor be barren in thy land. The number of thy days I will fulfill. I will send my fear in front of you, and will destroy all to whom thou shalt come. I will make all thy enemies turn their backs unto thee. I will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before thee. I will not drive them out from before thee in 1 year, lest the land become desolate, and the beast of the field multiply against thee. By little and little I will drive them out from before thee, until thou be increased and inherit the entire land. Now the beast of the field here, literally, are demons, are enemies. Remember that when Adam and Eve, when they sinned, God clothed them with the skin of an animal. God made this skin. And we've told you all the stories about how that was the skin, whoever had possession of it for the centuries had control. And that's how he manifested control of the animals and all that. Well, he's given you a better skin. And that the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every creature. Every creature. But he's not going to do it in a year. Because if he did it in a year, then his being isn't fully occupying the land. There's secret corners in the land. There's secret places. And it will be, if those secret places were allowed to exist, it'll be as though you never believed once. That's the spot in the wrinkle. Now, and I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even unto the Sea of the Philistines, from whom the desert unto the river. I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand. Thou shalt drive them out before thee. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. Now that's the process. Most of the, as a practical matter, ever since we've been a body, we first spent the first part of it here in Egypt. Then we've been wandering around the wilderness. And now we're entering the land. And in this land, there's no cause and effect. There's no reward, punishment. It's his good pleasure to give it all things to you freely. You've learned how to be abased throughout all of this. You've learned what isn't God through all of this experience. Matt told me this morning, that now for the first time he feels like he truly believes. That's an incredible thing. I won't review the case histories, but belief. I have heard of thee by the seeing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Promise here is that he is sending God, Yahweh, is sending his angel before thee. You don't have to worry about it. The only thing that you are required to do is to be you.
Yeah. Well, you said last night about if you have to do anything else but be yourself, but it's such a question.
I was thinking while we're on vacation, I think about coming back and get all angst out about my work and stuff, and then I realize it's like, I feel like I've been asleep for 32 years and all of a sudden I'm waking up, you know, and now I can be me and now I can whatever, you know, but it's like, like I've all of a sudden awakened from a long sleep.
The sleep that you're waking from is the same sleep that Abraham was under. God made a covenant between he and Abraham. I got to talk about it a minute. What God did at his 15 is he told Abraham to get a young heifer, a ram, a goat, a turtle dove, and a pigeon. And he said, take these and divide the heifer, the goat, and the ram in the midst, but don't divide or don't kill the ram, I mean the dove or the pigeon. And that was the entering into the covenant. What they did, what God did, it was when any tribe in the ancient societies entered into a covenant about anything, they took an animal, normally the largest and most important animal, and they split it down its backbone exactly in two, right down the middle of the spine. And they cut it and laid it half here and half here. And then the two of them, the two leaders of the tribe, marched through it in a particular manner, so they had to walk through the blood. And as they were doing it, they walked through the blood, through the death part, and they repeated a vow, and it says, if I break this covenant, so do to me. Well, it says that what happened, everything I've just read you is the covenant. Well, just God did this, and then he put Abraham to sleep. And then God alone walked through and made the covenant. And when he was doing that, he's saying, I will keep the covenant with this rebellious people even if it kills me. But the point of it is, it's not your business. You're going to sleep. And now, to you who have fallen asleep in life, not knowing what has happened, not knowing about the covenant, arise and shine, for your light has come. But that's just a hint of the covenant and the blood. And I, again, all of you have been asleep in life, just like Abraham was asleep when God walked through and performed the covenant. He did it. Not normally, this is done by two. Two of them had to walk through it. And God put Abraham to sleep, said, you enter into your rest. I'll do it. And we don't know what the ineffable name was, but we know that its essential sound was the sound of God, was the outflow of air. It was Abraham. It was Yahweh. Anyway, I can't do it because it's... But that's so he changed. And when they did this, tribe A and tribe B, tribe A after the covenant was tribe AB, tribe B was tribe BA. So that's when he changed Abraham and Sarah's name. Abram's name became Abraham. So the essential sound of the name of God is now in the name of Abraham. And he became AB. And Sarah became, Sari became whatever the sound I can't make, Sarah. So he joined at that point. And that's the one singular covenant that's always existed. And Jesus completed the covenant by his death. because even though the human race or Abraham and his people are the one that broke the covenant, since God is the only one that took it, then God had to die in order to make it valid. And that's why Christ said it's finished.
God said, if I screw up, I die, and if you screw up, I die.
That's right.
That's funny. And you know, if you have to do something, that's not a covenant with God, it's a covenant with
death. Right, it's a covenant with death. That's why Isaiah 57 says, you have made a covenant with death, and with hell you're at agreement. Because you still think you have to change yourself. Now as they walked through this, they made this particular sign. They walked, and so they made the sign of infinity. That's where we get the sign of infinity. Then the next step of the covenant was, they cut their hands, and they shook hands. Now, wait a minute. They cut their hands, and they held the hand up and took the oath of the covenant. And they had to let the blood hit the ground. And that's where we get the idea, when you take an oath, you raise your right hand. The next thing they did was, they took the place where they'd both been cut and joined the bloods together, that they would become the same blood. And that's where we get shaking hands. And it was only after this exercise that it was legal to call someone a friend. Because in that process, you have seen the covenant, and you are in agreement of the covenant. That's why Jesus said, I have called you servants, but I now call you friends, for I've showed unto you all that the Father doeth, the covenant, the one covenant. And it was only after the covenant and after the shaking of the hands that something called mercy was possible, hasid. And it means that I now, after this covenant, you are as my flesh and I am as your flesh. And if you break it, you die. But anyway, listen to the tape.
What you said, one thing, another one, was about if you haven't entered into a covenant with God, you're still negotiating.
And that's what makes us a body. Not because we've entered into a covenant with each other. If you do that, or if you're married or going together even, if you're entering into that, then all you will do is negotiate. The only reason we're a body is because we haven't permitted that. We have demanded that each of you die, that you pick up the cross, because you have. That's the penalty of that. And in that agreement, in that union with God, then all kinds of interplay is possible. That's why the hot seat is such a terrible experience. Because it's the essence of the, it makes mercy and no mercy so vivid.
Makes you run for that cup.
There was an interesting thing that happened when I was on the hot seat the other night. I mean,
you're on the hot floor.
Well, yeah, but this is before I got on the hot floor. This is just like, I mean, while the first stuff was happening and I was just turning to stone there, I mean, it was like literally I felt myself going to sleep at that point. I mean, it was just, I was going to sleep. When Gary was reading that thing, you know, I mean, I was going to lay down and go to sleep right there. I mean, and then just die, I guess, you know. But, that's why it's got to be totally mercy, because you're so helpless.
Nah. One of the things that we found out in the study of the covenant and the blood is that when a covenant was made in the ancient times of all tribes, after this process of cutting and after the process of marching through the blood, then a ceremonial meal was eaten. And if the covenant related to matters of supreme importance between the two peoples or the two tribes, then because the penalty of, of this, of a breaking of that covenant, was death. And because now, for the first time, they could call each other legally friends, then they had to have a system that defined this covenant or this contract far more intimately than anything that they'd ever known before. And it's far more intimately than anything we know. Because during the ceremonial meal, a system became, or a process of thought became natural to the parties of the covenant. And it's, in the Hebrew word is hasid. And it means what we describe as mercy. And what you are, it means that it's better described as loving kindness. And it says, I now act before you as though you were my own flesh. And then during the ceremonial meal that they ate, they literally said, as they broke the bread and drank the wine, they said, as this bread is me, so this bread is you. And they shared the common bread. And as a result of the covenant, they said, as this wine is me, so this wine is you. And the fact that this is a covenant between you and God, then it's simply another affirmation that the Son of God, or Jesus Christ, is now in you, is now you. And that you and He are one flesh, every part of you. And there's no thing in the universe that can separate you from that. And just as though you have been doing this in ceremony for a long time, now you have been called to awaken from your sleep. In the same way that Abraham was awakened from his sleep. And during that sleep, he experienced a horror of great darkness because he saw the battle that was coming through in him. He knew the battle that was ahead. And so, but even he slept through the battle. You understand? And then when he awakened, all parts of the covenant were finished. And it doesn't describe it, but I'm convinced that it happened, that he ate the bread and the wine at that point, as he does so many times later, especially after being fed by Melchizedek. So we are in a blood covenant with the God of this universe. And the blood covenant says that you just have to be you. That's all it says. Because as we celebrate the covenant in this celebration of this meal, we are saying along with God, and God is saying to us, as this bread is me, so it is you. And as this blood is me, or my blood, so it's your blood. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So it's impossible for you now, in eating this in knowledge, what you've done is forgotten yourself because you were asleep during the covenant. Now you're just starting to wake up. Some of you are a little groggy. Buck's been a real heavy sleeper. But now you who have fallen asleep in life, awake. For the light has come upon you. Doesn't matter what your condition is. Doesn't matter what your worth or lack of worth. Doesn't matter what idols or imaginings you have. It's all done. Now as we eat this bread, and drink this wine, which is that mini Passover, we are saying with the Father, He is saying to you, as this bread is me, so now it is you. Amen. And that's what Jesus, who represented the Father in time and space, said. took the bread, and he blessed it, and he said, Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth, who bringeth forth the bread of life from this earthen vessel. He's saying, You are, He are one. He said, Take, eat, this is my body, and you affirm, as I eat this bread, so I am His body. Hallelujah.
Good month.
September,
Supreme.
No, September, all she did was touch it. Magic.
That was
magic fingers.
That was good. That's
my wife.
Your lovely
wife. Now he's going to do something even more astounding. You were created in the image and likeness of God, Adam was. Image means tselem. It's like the glove is the image of a hand. But now we're doing something wild. Image is the whole universe, every man. But now as we drink this wine, we become in the likeness. Because we affirm the oneness of Him in us. And we transform. We transform our mind, and by that we transfigure and rip time. You understand? There is no thing in the universe that can stand against. No law can come against you. No natural phenomenon. No disease, no imagined separation, no belief in fear, no motivation from anything other than love, no concern for worth. And by this in knowledge, you pour hasid, or loving kindness, which is the hottest fire of all, over every molten image, and melt them. As wax. He took the cup and he gave thanks. Took the cup and he gave thanks and he said, Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who createst the fruit of the vine. Now, I got to mention two things here. Remember he took those three animals in the covenant, cut them down the back, split, walked through the blood, covenant, you were asleep, he's doing all the work. Two things he didn't kill and he let loose, he didn't divide. The dove and the pigeon. The dove is always the Holy Spirit. The pigeon represents Israel, the bride. So he didn't kill or divide the spirit or the purpose. It was all alive from the very beginning of the covenant. And we've just drinking a toast now. To Israel, the bride of Christ. And the dove, who is the empowerment for every part of your life. And he said, Take, this is my blood, which is shed for you for the remission of sin. And that you're saying, as he is saying to you, as this blood is mine, so now, this blood is yours. You understand? A little bit?
This is like the song, The Cup of Salvation, My Lips Receive.
A cup of salvation, my lips receive. No more cup of trembling. You have drunk the corrupt cup of trembling. It has been wrung out in you. For a small moment, He has forsaken you. But with tender, great mercies, He is now gathered. And that nothing can ever come against you again. To life.
To life.
To life.
wine is much better color than you ever get.
Well, this is the box wine, which came from, it was a good treat.
Oh, it is a box wine.
Box treat. It's a good box.
It is a box.
Oh, yeah.
I love a good box wine.
Yay, she's singing.
Waiter, your best box for my drink.
Bring me a box.
It cost you extra $20.
Again, I please beg of you, those that didn't hear last night, to listen to the, because you, there's so much in that covenant and blood that...
The tape's not ready.
No, but it'll be ready soon.